disaster.
The whole website's down.
Okay, good evening, gentlemen.
I didn't get on the website at all.
We are continuing Rambam, Hilchos Shabbos, Perek Chav Beis, Halacha Chav, Chapter 22, Law 20. We were in the middle of Halacha Chav, so let's just quickly review the first half. We won't go over the halachas of that. We'll do the second half of Chav and go through the halachas there. Misha Rachat, okay, again, page 2, 180, sorry, what did I say? 20, 188, 189. Misha Rachatz B'mayim, a person washed in water, bathed in water, Mistabeg Balontios, he can dry himself with a towel. Umevia Biyota can bring it with your hand, Vein Choshin Shem Yuschad, you don't have to concern yourself, maybe you will squeeze it. V'chol Misha Nashru Kelo B'mayim, anybody whose clothing fell into the water, or it rained on them, or whatever, Mahalech B'mayim, you can walk in them, Vein Choshin Shem Yuschad, you don't have to concern yourself whether you will squeeze it. That's what we're up to yesterday. Now we're going to now. What do you do with the wet clothes now?
Now
you take off the wet clothes. What do you do with the wet clothes?
It's very worrying.
So, for asalo l'shatcham, you're forbidden to spread them out. Okay, let's say to hang it on the line, and the sun should dry it out. Let's say you can't do that. And where can't you? This va'afilu b'soch beso, even inside of your house, you cannot do it. Okay. Now, the commentary is, why? Gzera, the decree is Shema Yoimer Haroa. The guy, an innocent bystander who walks by your house, sees your clothesline, sees the wet clothing, what's he going to say? Hareze Kibes Ksuso B'Shabbos. Oh, look at this guy. Shmerel, he washed his clothes on Shabbos. Ushtacha B'Yabasha. And he's drying it, laying it out on the dry land to dry out.
Even if it's inside your house?
Hold on. So there's a double concern. One concern is other people would think, I guess you're allowed to do it. If Rav Machalitz hung it out to dry, it must be for sure he washed it. So then I guess I could wash it too. Or people will just suspect the person of sinning. Right? So that's the whole idea of Maris Ayin. You're making something look that's worse than it may be. So you can't do it. And here's the point. Wherever the rabbis prohibited Maris Ayin, where people will get the wrong impression, afilu bechadre chadorim osur, even in the most innermost chamber, it is forbidden. So now, a few points to add over here. Number one, this is only if, I don't know the Sfar to be Mechalik, this is only, you can't leave clothes that you put on Shabbos. But if you put them on before Shabbos, you don't have to worry. That's interesting why you don't have to worry, because how would a person know the difference?
Yeah.
But the Shulchan Aruch burns down, you don't have to worry about that. That, remember, it's all rabbinic, so how far rabbinic are we going to take things over here?
So just to clarify, so that means if you put them
Let's just wait. Okay. Let me just finish everything. Now this only comes to a thing where we only say this law of Maris Ayin when people will think you transgressed a Torah violation. Because they're going to think you washed it, and washing is a Torah violation. But when the question of violence, a rabbinical violation, it looks like he did something rabbinically wrong, then we don't worry about Maris Ayin. That's the first point. Now, let's...
There's no Maris Ayin with rabbinical.
Right, because that's rabbinical. The people will think he may have done a rabbinic thing. We don't do it on rabbinic, only on biblical things. It's like a double rabbinic again. Maris Ayin Bechlal is Drabbana. There's nothing wrong with it. The rabbis are afraid. So rabbis are afraid what? That maybe thinks you did a rabbinical thing already? That's a double rabbinic again. So we don't do that.
You don't do gazer on a gazer. You can't do a
so if, but if it looks like the thing's on the line, people are going to think you washed it on Shabbos. That's biblically prohibited. You can't really lend yourself. Okay, why if you do it on Erev Shabbos difference? I don't know this far right now. My question wasn't so much why.
I just want to make sure I understand. So if you wear a suit before Shabbos starts, and you wear it to shul, and you walk home and it's raining, you can hang that up because you started wearing it before Shabbos.
No. We're talking about if you wash something before Shabbos, and you're putting on the line before Shabbos, you can leave it on even on Shabbos.
Oh, all right.
Because you did it all before Shabbos.
Okay, so that doesn't help us with the drying of wet clothes.
Oh, so now we got to look inside here to find up all the other things that are going on over here. So... Now, first of all, this applies to objects that are really wet. It can't be just a little bit of... Let's say you got caught in a rainstorm, right? So now you want to hang up your clothes, right? So if it's just a little bit wet, that's not a problem. because that's not an issue. I'm not going to think you washed it. It never was that wet to begin with. But if it's really it's so wet that when you touch it, right, and then you can transfer the liquid to touch another object, that it's got to be very wet. That's number one. Now, there's limitations to this prohibition because it only can be in a way that people are going to think that you washed something. So it could be it's not shaykh to people to think that way under certain circumstances. Look at all the possibilities over here. So first of all, you have to hang in a place where laundry is usually hung to dry, number one. Like an outdoor clothesline, an indoor clothes rack, a laundry room or a bathroom. It's got to be in a place where you normally hold. What if in the kitchen? You usually put wet clothes in the kitchen?
Usually not.
Or you just put your wet coat on a hook.
So it doesn't apply to hanging wet clothes in areas that you normally wouldn't do that. So therefore you could hang wet clothes in a closet. Because no one's going to dry wet clothes usually from the laundry room in the closet. It's also, you can hang a wet towel or an article of clothing on the back of a chair. Because usually you're not going to hold something there as well. Also, you're allowed to hang wet clothing in an area, even an area that's used for drying laundry if it's hung in a manner that's unusual for laundry. In other words, what if you hang a garment or a towel in a crumpled shape? Usually you do it, it's all folded out and it's going to dry. What if you just dumped it over the line, it's all crumpled up? Nobody hangs something like that because it obviously wasn't laundered, right? Also, it's possible to hang up a wet article that's visibly dirty, that's wet, because he obviously didn't wash it if it's visibly dirty. Let's say it's full of mud and wet. See, hang it up so it dries, but it's full of mud. Who's going to think you washed it if it's full of mud? Okay. Right? As well, what about items that got wet that are usually dry clean, but they're not washed? So a coat and a suit, who washes a winter coat?
Nobody washes a suit.
Nobody washes a suit. So if it's a suit, who's going to think you ever washed it? Right?
Glad I came back tonight.
So now those things could be hung in an area that normally is reserved for laundry.
Right.
So like in our house, in the laundry room, my wife has a little string that goes across, and certain things she doesn't want to put in the dryer, she hangs from that.
That could be there.
Right?
Your suit could be there.
So now if we come home from Shabbos and we're soaking wet from a rainstorm, and it's our coats and our jackets, you could hang it up there because no one's going to think you took it to the laundry.
Right?
So that's that point. Now, one other interesting point while we're on the topic, what about if you have a wet garment or towel?
Your undershirt, that's a problem. Because
if it's totally soaked through and through, the undershirt you couldn't hang up that way. So what would you do? You'd hang it up in the bedroom. Because nobody hangs up laundry in the bedroom.
Right. And your white shirt, the same thing.
Let's say it was a hot Shabbos day and it was 95 degrees. You come home, everything's soaking wet. Sometimes everything's a rag.
Everything's a rag.
That's wet. So you can't hang it in the laundry room. You can hang it in your bedroom over the chair. That's not a problem. Okay? Now, here's another interesting thing while we're on the topic. What about putting a wet garment or towel near a source of heat where the water absorbed can be heated to Yad Soletispo?
Now that's
right.
A problem.
Let's say you've got a baseboard heater.
Yeah.
Or the old radiator, something like that. So you put it right on, it's going to get nice and hot. That's going to be a problem because the liquid inside there will be cooked. You wouldn't be allowed to do this. So you couldn't drape it over such a thing.
Could you put it over the forced air vent? I mean, that's not that hot.
You have to know how hot. It doesn't make it that hard. It only makes it 74 degrees.
Right, that's all it's set to.
I was going to do that on Shabbos. Put my gloves on when I came home.
On the radiator, as long as it's not going to make your house 105. It's not going to make it 110.
Now, you couldn't put in a steam schwitz on the heater.
You could put it over the...
You could go under the sauna.
Because it's not going to be 110. No way it's going to be 110. So that's fine.
68.
You tell the person now it's okay. Okay. One last thing, it's related to these halachas. You can't walk near a body of water. I think it was a Rambam before we had it also, but it's in this area. Because you might fall in, and then your clothes would be soaked, and you might wring them out. So you shouldn't walk along the edge of a river. Now, let's...
Or a swimming pool.
That's going to be the application. What about walking on the ledge of a swimming pool?
That would be a problem.
You shouldn't do that.
That's problematic.
Because you might fall into the thing.
But we just said you could put your feet in the pool last week.
So that's so I guess you have to make a difference if you're sitting by the edge of the pool, and you're probably not going to fall in. But if you're walking by the edge of the pool, I guess you just walk right to the pool and sit down. So that it's not so pushed. It's not so pushed. Right?
You're sitting. You might.
No, but walking around the pool. Now you're walking, you could trip and fall in. But if you go to the pool, just sit down, just put your 2 feet in. It's not likely you're gonna. I don't know. Maybe
it could be wet on the deck, and then what you're wearing gets wet.
That's okay. That's like falling into a pool. There. That's not so wet. Getting in the pool is really wet.
Yeah.
Right. So similarly, you can't walk on a frozen lake, even if it's relatively shallow, unless you're sure that the ice is thick enough to support your weight. Because you fall in, I mean, besides the sakana.
Certainly shouldn't snowmobile.
Right. Certainly shouldn't snowmobile on Shabbos either. Yeah. Okay, very good. So I don't have to look further. I mean, Pashas, you could put your feet in the water, but I think there's a difference walking around the pool. There's a greater likelihood to trip over than just sitting down and, you know, and just put your feet into the water.
You're anchored.
You know, what? Yeah, you're anchored.
More stable.
I could see why those might want to be mach and not do it. I could hear why they want to be mach. Okay.
Rabbi?
Yes, sir.
I never understood really the concept of Maris Ayin so much. Aren't you supposed to give people the benefit of the doubt? And like, if I go into McDonald's with my kippah and I want to buy a Coke because whatever, it's the only place, whatever, I buy a Coke, what's the big deal?
Because the rabbis know that people like, even though we're supposed to judge favorably, they know the realities are. In fact, there is such a mis to judge people favorably, it means people by nature wouldn't judge favorably. So don't place a stumbling block before the blind. You know, most people will not judge favorably. So why put yourself in a situation that you're going
to tempt? So if someone wants to speak Lashon Hara about me, and was in McDonald's.
So don't give them opportunity.
Don't give them opportunity.
They're
going to think they can go to McDonald's.
Yeah.
It's more than that. They're going to say, you know what? If Oren's a religious guy, he goes to McDonald's. I guess the rabbis, maybe it's a kosher McDonald's. Or they're allowed to go to that McDonald's. And they're going to go to that McDonald's. So that's the old Maris Ayin rule. Okay, let's go back into the Rambam. Yes, sir.
Just back to this Marisar with the Rambam. Just correct me if I'm wrong. Something like chicken is Doraisa not considered meat.
Correct. Right.
So theoretically, Doraisa, you could have a chicken cheese sandwich. Correct?
Yes.
So let's say I'm giving an extreme case. So if somebody sees a person eating such a thing, you're breaking a Rambam.
Right.
Technically.
Right.
So isn't that like from a Mari science?
No, but you're usher to do that.
Actually, because they think it's meat.
No,
they don't know.
But that's us. But you're usher to do that. We're saying if you do something that people might think you did a Darabonin,
not that you actually did
do a Darabonin.
Okay. Okay.
I'm not exactly. A case doesn't come to mind. If people will see. You went out of a place that only sells treif to Rabbanan.
Yeah.
In other words, can you go into a place that only sells the Rabbanan treif?
I'll give you a great example. M&M meat shops is not kosher. Their veggie burgers have a COR on it.
No, that's different.
Because they sell
biblically treif food also.
Yeah, they sell biblically treif.
But let's say this is a place that signs, we only have chicken. It's big sign. Chicken only.
Chicken only.
That's not a good example either, because the chicken wasn't treifed properly. It would be usher d'oraisa as well.
Right.
But let's say there's a case where it's only rabbinically prohibited food. So you could technically go into such a place, because what's the worst people going to think? You did a d'rabbanan. I have to think of more practical cases.
But the issue is not that you did it, it's that you're suspected.
Yeah, they think you did a d'rabbanan. So that we don't have to worry. But if they think you did a d'oraisa, this case here, did he do anything d'oraisa? No, he hung it up. There's nothing wrong with hanging it up. They're going to think he washed it. If he would have washed it, that's d'oraisa. What if they would have thought he did something rabbinically? No.
Then you don't have to worry.
Yeah, but you can't do something rabbinically prohibited. You can't do, because they're going to think you violated a rabbinic.
On purpose.
And that's not Maris Ayin. You actually did it. You can't violate a Rabbanan. That's not Maris Ayin. That's an actual Aveira.
Right. Okay.
Well, but the problem here is the washing is biblical.
Yes.
Right, but that's you didn't wash. You just hung.
If they think you did something biblically wrong, then you have Maris Ayin.
That's
problem.
What it is. And therefore, even in your house, and nobody would see, because we can't make distinctions already, because even in your house, believe it or not, people pop in. You never have a case in your life. You're not all of a sudden strangers in your house. You never had that in your life.
Yeah.
Also, what are you doing in the house? The door was open. I just went in, in the house. And maybe when he came in the house, I was hanging something in Shabbos on the in the line in my laundry room. The guy's gonna think he could do it. So there's, and especially now, I mean, what goes on with the people videotaping you through the hotel room keyhole door.
Really?
All these things that are going on. There's no such thing anymore of privacy. No, the people, I meant. There's a whole mice. There's a whole mice.
Really?
Somebody.
Yeah, there was a whole, ESPN news.
A whole thing that this guy went to the keyhole, to the people, and was able, I don't know how, to see inside and saw the person doing all kinds of private things. And they put it on YouTube
lens.
And everything. It's like crazy. So there's no such thing as privacy anymore. It just doesn't exist. Yeah?
I'm sorry to just go back to this, but Oren's issue, because I just got to have clarity on this. So today, a lot of people go to McDonald's to get a coffee.
Okay, so now if it's common practice, you have to know what is people's understanding. If it's a common thing for a person going to a McDonald's and get a coffee, so you can go and get a coffee there. If people commonly see it that way.
But in the Jewish area, isn't that, for, you can't do that.
Like well, first of all, if obviously you have another place, you shouldn't go to another place. You can go to the McDonald's.
You got a kosher second cup.
But Tim Hortons, the same thing.
All right, so that's what
I'm
saying.
They do
so
sell coffee, though.
No, they sell Treif donuts.
Yeah.
So there, but there it's, yeah, but there it's very usual to only pick up a coffee.
Right.
But let's say you go to a restaurant already. That's already,
McDonald's.
You know, it's not so posh, right? So again, people, since there are people who only buy a drink, so you could be, you know, so then they can't necessarily say you went to buy more, and then, you know, what are you going? You know, Mistami, you went to get a drink. It's if it's not uncommon, if everybody goes in, buys a whole meal, then you can't go in. If like if everyone goes into McDonald's and everybody buys a Big Mac, right, then you couldn't go in just to buy the coffee. But I would imagine there's a lot of people who just buy a coffee. So if that's so, then you can go and get a coffee. You have to know what the mores are. But yeah, second cup is a lot of people just buy a coffee. That's very usual. It's called coffee shop. There's a tray of donut you could buy, but there's more people probably just buy the coffee without the donut than those who buy with the donut. So what's the Maris Ayin about?
It's the same ruling like with Starbucks. No, if you go to Starbucks, most people are just picking up
coffee. But I guess, what if there's a place that only will serve you full dinners, and if you have to buy a full dinner, no one's going to think. Even though you just want to buy a coffee, then, you know, everyone's going to say.
Can't you, if you're in the middle of rural Saskatchewan and there's a McDonald's on the road,
But again, on those places, it's not uncommon that travelers will just buy a coffee.
No, but that's what I'm saying. In that,
you know, when you stop off at Angola, you know, everyone knows people are going just to the bathroom, they're just getting a drink, and it's common that that's happening. They're not all sitting down to have a Big Mac.
You're at Bathurst and Lawrence. That's not the place to go.
No, that wouldn't. You're not. Nobody's going
to. No, but again, if it's a coffee shop, then they know you're buying a coffee.
No, but he's saying McDonald's. He's saying McDonald's.
Yeah, and certainly if you have any other options, why shouldn't you?
But I'm just wondering about Alan's distinction, because if we're not distinguishing from your privacy of your house to outside, why are we distinguishing between a Jewish firm area and a non-firm area in McDonald's?
I'm not really. I'm not suggesting it. I'm just saying if you can go to a kosher place and you can go to. So you obviously go to the kosher place. If you're on a highway, it's the only thing that's there. It's the only thing that's there. If the McDonald's only sold Big Macs and 99% went into things, you shouldn't go into such a McDonald's no matter where it would be.
Regardless.
If everyone's buying Big Macs.
No, but isn't the whole issue of Maris Ayin that there are other Jews that are...
No, but that's what it says, even Bechedri Chador.
That's my point. It's not in the privacy of your own home.
You know, you'll be surprised where you'll find a Jew. I remember I once went somewhere up to Cottage Country somewhere, and I said, no, this was a different trip. And like, I was momish, I took my wife to this horseback riding place with the girls. And there's this guy with this hat, looks like a goy. He goes, Rabbi Michalowicz.
International.
You remember me?
Yeah. Yeah, I gave $18. There's no escape.
You can't escape.
Did you hit him up? Did you hit him up?
For somebody from the village schools, my friend. Right? So it's... that's when I decide to go to Godrich.
Yeah, after that,
because nobody
is there.
Because I like whatever. I'm just so that's the whole board. There's no
like
such thing as a private thing. There's no such thing. But usually when you talk about highways, it's not unusual to just buy a coffee. So that's not an issue. Then it's acceptable because it's commonly done. The people just go in. You go to some McDonald's. They sell coffee. People go in and out and get up. They go. Really, you want to go to the bathroom?
Right.
You want to go to the bathroom? Right. Yeah, many people just go in to go to the bathroom. If it's a highway stop, then everybody knows there's many other possibilities, yes, including going to the bathroom, which is totally benign. Right? And if you want to buy a drink because you're thirsty, there's nothing else to buy. So that it's a rate. So the situation kind of will dictate. For example, in the very beginning, when they first came up with margarine, so there's a big problem. Could you put margarine on a mashed potato with a steak dinner?
Yeah.
In the beginning, part of margarine. So at the beginning, the rabbis were saying you can't do it. Margarine. In the beginning. Because they said, it looks like butter.
It looks like butter.
So they said right away, the only way you could do it is if you put the carton of butter on the table that says margarine.
Okay, so you hold it up.
And you had to do that for a long time.
It's like the whiteners.
You had to do that for a long time. But now you don't have to do it because it's so commonplace that there's parv margarine, no one will assume that it is milchik margarine. But in the beginning, where it was, it never was. There's no such thing as parv margarine. All of a sudden, parv margarine, what's going on? Or we once had the secular people for Shabbos lunch. And we were serving dessert in the garden. And we're serving parv ice cream. Says, what's going on, Rabbi? Even I don't eat dairy after dinner. So I say, parv? What? Then it was parv. So
they make this?
Well, listen, if you were a goy, why would you have parv ice cream? It's beyond me. Like parv ice cream, like, who? Only if you're lactose intolerant. What kind of market is that? So you can understand that there's reason to worry about these things. Okay, let's move on. Chaval. Chaf Aleph and Chaf Beis are not practical cases, but it's interesting cases nonetheless. The next case, talking about one mikvah on top of another mikvah, a mikvah you go in to dunk, okay? It happens to be one mikvah on top, one mikvah on the bottom, and they want the drains of the mikvah to connect to each other so the water will connect. The issue is going to be, what if you have a way to plug up the area that connects the two mikvahs? Is there a problem? Remember we learned before, you can't plug up a bottle very tightly where there could be water there, because when you push it in, you might squeeze the cloth material as it goes into the bottle. So it's a similar situation here where you got the connecting parts of the two mikvahs, you're closing it up with some material. Is it prohibited or not? And you'll see there's a unique distinction here. Chafal. Shtei mitaharos zo agavzu, two mikvahs that make people tor, one on top of the other. So what can you do? You can notel asapakak mibein time. You can take out the plug, the cloth plug, in between them. Umashikon, which will enable the water to more readily flow from one mikvah to the other mikvah. That's not a problem at all because you're taking it out. That's not a problem. But umachsir. So, and now you want to connect the two. So you don't have to worry when you're pulling it out that you would squeeze it, because you surely don't want to squeeze, you just want to pull it out. But more importantly, you can return the stopper, the cloth stopper, to the place. Why? Well, aren't you going to push it in really hard? No, you're not. Why? You won't come to squeeze it. Because you put it in, you don't want to put it in so much that it totally separates the water. You want to put it in to just limit how much water goes in between that pipe, because you still want to keep them connected to some degree, or the other mikvah won't be good. So therefore, when you put it in, you're just going to put it in gently without pushing hard, and since you're not going to push hard, you won't come to squeeze it, you're allowed to do it. Another case, what about a drain that is refuse water is coming out of your house? So upokakim esabiv besudorin ubechol dar mitaltel. You can plug up a drain with garments or clothing or anything else that you're allowed to carry. So that the water won't overflow from the drain and will go on food or on other utensils or things like that. Now, since you're doing that, you're not going to plug it so tightly. In other words, you have a drain, and I guess if the drain would back up or something, it could be shooting out and can mess up all your stuff. So you can close up the drain gently so that, and not squeezing hard, so maybe if a little leaks out, that's not going to be such a big deal. So you're not going to push it in so hard. So that you could also cover that up. You can plug that up. But let's say you've got this drain that has two directions where it goes from the drain, and you want it to go in one direction, you want it to go out, totally out, and not in the other direction where it remains parched in the house. So it's like a zoy, you know what I mean?
A Y,
right? So it's going down the drain. You want it to go this way, and you don't want it to go that way. So when you're going to plug that middle part, you're going to plug it hard. So that you can't do, right? Shema Yisrod Be'eshadocha. You might squeeze it when you're pushing it hard. Sure, pekak, sure, mind, because the pekak, that the plug, is going to be totally saturated with water, and when it's saturated with water, it will be squeezed. So let's just do one more, because it kind of finishes up this topic with the clothing, and there's not too much on this. Also, letaken beis yad shel begadim. You can't fix a sleeve of clothing, ulishabram shvarm, and to make them into forming layers of cuffs. I guess you know they. I don't know how you make cuffs, but you like press it and press it and press it. So you know, like the fancy sleeves, right? There must be a term for that. I don't know.
You mean like the tuxedo shirts?
Yeah, whatever. You want to make it ruffles or whatever. Yeah. So you kind of have to. Please. You have to kind of fold one over. So you can't do that with a garment because you're obviously fixing up that garment. Like you do on a weekday. And this is done after you wash clothing. It seems after they wash clothing, they would form cuffs or layers or pleats with the garments. You can't do that. You also don't fold clothing on Shabbos in the way you would do it after you wash the clothes. Right? Like you do in the weekday, so with clothing that you wash. With a lot of clothes you fold. When you wash them, what do you do after you wash them? You fold them. So you don't fold clothes in the exact same way that you fold clothes after you wash them. Again, it could be for a number of reasons. You may come to wash them, people might think you wash them, it could be a whole number of reasons. So you can't do it exactly the way it would be coming right out of the laundry. It's not that far different than hanging things on the line.
Yeah, it sounds like because
it's all too connected to the washing process. Even though you didn't wash anything, it's too connected to that process. But what if you don't have any other garments to wear? You know, this is the only garment I have. I took it off and I want to fold it so it looks nice for the next day. Mutu lakaplo ulapashto. You can fold it, you can stretch it, liskasaspo, and to cover it. To wear Kadeshi Snow on Shabbos, so it should be nice for Shabbos when you want to wear it again. Now, that's very interesting. Now, we're not talking about folding it on the pleat, though. Folding it on the crease. It's not talking about that. It's just folding it up to fold it so it doesn't get worse. But we're not talking about keeping the crease solid. That's not what he's talking about. Now, when is this a problem, folding this up? Ushia Begat Chodesh Shalom, when it's a white garment, because then it has more... the folding is much more necessary. Because it gets wrinkled and can get dirty right away. But and when you do fold, and when you are allowed to fold, only one person folds it. But two people to fold is not. So when two people do it, they will stretch it out completely, and that will repair any wrinkles that are there, which you cannot do. So basically, what comes out of this halacha is, and the most important shaila comes out is folding your talus. That's what you have. So folding a talus, you cannot fold a talus on the creases exactly the way you have it on Shabbos. That you for sure cannot do because that is strengthening the crease. It's like pressing. So you can't do that. But so some people say, well, you can't do anything. You just dump it the way it is. So that you don't have to do either because that will totally make the thing all yucky.
Yeah.
So what you can do, you fold it, but not on the creases. You're just folding it to put it away, but not on the creases. Either against the crease or totally, either the opposite of the crease or just not on the crease at all.
The opposite of the crease still...
No, it makes it worse. It makes it worse to do the opposite of the crease. It undoes the crease, if anything.
Yeah.
We're saying you're just folding it without the creases at all. So you're folding without the creases at all. You just don't want it to get worse, but you're not doing any...
It's like tellus folding on Shabbos too, isn't it?
What?
Folding the talus.
That's what I'm talking about.
He's talking about the talus.
So similarly, maybe you shouldn't fold tablecloths on the crease or things like that. And certainly a white tablecloth, two people shouldn't be folding under any circumstances. Because you may just pull at it and then stretch it out. We're afraid. Pulling it out already would be repairing it. So if it's a colored one, then that's okay. But if it's a white one, you'd have to do it by yourself and not with somebody else. Even when you're taking it off from Shabbos, you have to do it by yourself.
Is the issue for the talus because somebody might think process?
No, it's with if it's on the crease, that's like strengthening the crease. It's like pressing.
So it's what, fixing?
It's like it's laundering, laundering.
Laundering.
Part of laundering.
It's part of laundering process.
Okay.
You can't put things on to make. So what do you do? So you take off your pants, for example. You can't fold it the way you normally would fold it during the weekday on the hanger. The only thing you do is like drape it over the chair, and if they happen to, you know, sit nicely and the creases kind of on its own. You know what I'm saying?
You don't have to take them off and try again.
You know what I'm saying? You just put it down on the chair. If it happens to sit nicely down and it closes on the crease, then close on the crease.
So now what happens if, let's say you have two suits. Yeah, and you wear one Friday night and you wear one Shabbos morning. Yeah. Should you have your good Shabbos suit stay for the whole Shabbos there, for from Friday night, let's say at 11 o'clock, till Motzi Shabbos, let's say at 5:30, 6 o'clock, in an improper form, because it'll
nothing will happen to it. Nowadays, for sure not. Now they give all these with permanent crease things. Now it's for sure not a problem. I've never had a problem. You hang it over the chair. If you hang it over the chair, the problem is you drop it on the floor. It gets crunched up.
No,
that's
no, don't drop it on the floor.
You drape it over a chair. It's just hanging down.
How about if you hang it up, not on the crease?
You hang up not on a crease, you can also do
can
that.
You put your jacket on a hanger?
You can put your jacket on a hanger. That's
not
okay.
You hang it up not on the crease.
You can't put your pants on. You can't put your pants so that they're on that crease, even on a chair.
On the chair.
If I fold it, the waist part over the chair, and I put it down, and it happens to one on top of the other, that's
not
okay.
That's not the way
you
do laundry.
But if you're doing it, you know, you're holding the tops and making sure the creases are together, then you're fine. That you can't do.
Yeah, because you wouldn't put them on the chair to improve the crease.
You don't have to go on the floor.
On the floor? I've been doing that.
No, you just
hang it
over the
chair.
Oh, take the pants out.
That's my excuse for not hanging my clothes.
Just hang it belt side over the top of the chair, and it just hangs down.
Yeah.
Or over a...
Or whatever, or a dresser, or something like that.
Or the rack where you were hanging.
Or you could hang it over the... Take the belt part over the hanger, just going over the lip of the hanger, and the hands, both sides of the pants just drape right down.
That's
not, oh, you can do that.
But not folding the two legs together. Just take the top of the pant and put it over the hanger part, just hanging over, and then the rest just dangles down.
Why are you restriction on white, like, as opposed to all your stuff?
White, it looks more repairing. It makes it, because wrinkles on white show up much more.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead, guys. Yes.